Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love, sponsored by the D.D. Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. I am TJ Jackson, and with me I have both of my brothers, Taj and Terrell. How are you guys?
What's going on, T?
What's going on? It's warm out there, right?
Yeah, it's really hot.
It's a hot day here in Southern California. What is it, 10? It's supposed to be like 103, I think. I don't know if it's that hot, but it feels warm. But we are live on the Power of Love show, so if you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. We're going to open up. I don't know if we're going to open up phone lines, but Twitter's always open, right? Twitter doesn't close. So if you want to tweet us a question, a comment, a quote, anything to add to our topic and add to our conversation, please do so. Please tweet us at DDJ Foundation. Again, that's at DDJ Foundation. We are not licensed therapists. We're just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it and we've learned from it. And we like to share our opinions in an attempt to help you overcome whatever it is you're going through. Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and to find it. Don't just rely on us. All right, guys, let's go right into it. How was your week? Let's talk about what's going on. Anything?
Taj, you got anything?
We have a softball game coming up, so
yes.
We're preparing for that. We have a charity softball game for the DDJF.
Talk about it. It was originally planned last month.
Yes.
Or earlier?
Earlier, June 24th.
So last month. Yeah. But we had to reschedule it because of our grandfather being sick and his passing.
Yes. And so
We rescheduled it.
And it's now July 29th, so this Sunday.
Cool.
And super excited about it. I think you can. I'm trying to think where they can find out more information. We'll send some links over.
Yeah, so make sure you're following us on Instagram at DD Jackson Foundation. It's all spelled out at DD Jackson Foundation. There you're going to get. You'll see the flyer come up in the next couple of days, but it is open to the public, provided you got to buy tickets.
Yeah,
and the tickets are going to the foundation, which helps support those in need.
And we got some good names.
We got some great names.
Yeah, so look on the Instagram for that as well.
Besides TJ Jackson, who do you guys have that a great name?
Well, TJ Jackson scared away a couple people, so we left him off the invite.
Okay, well,
we'll send that in the Instagram.
Okay,
I don't want to start just naming people and
there
all
you
that
go.
Stuff. Because I'm appreciative of everyone playing.
Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be a fun fun day of softball, and it's for a good cause. There will be some food and vendors and and a chance to meet and greet.
Come hang out with us.
So come hang out and support the foundation at the same time. Very good.
Yeah.
Taj, anything else? That's a good mention because that's something that's important. But anything else going on in your personal?
I shot Tiana for the maternity photo shoot.
Oh.
Our very first maternity one. Yeah.
Cool.
I was just like, let's do it.
That's great.
It was a lot of fun, and I'm going to start posting pictures on my Instagram about that
so
as well.
Crazy.
That's good, man.
Yeah, so.
How's that all going,
my
Taj?
Little girl's first photo shoot. She was a trooper, too. What?
That's funny. She was a trooper. How's that all going, Taj? How's your first child, you know, the preparation?
It's going surprisingly very like there's.
Well, you're not doing anything.
No, but I mean, even for her, she's like, she has. Yeah. Symptoms every once in a while, and it's very far. It's almost like I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. She doesn't have like those cravings that like 3 o'clock
yeah,
in the
you gotta
morning.
Watch out for that.
No, she's not had anything like that, so it's been almost I'm almost spoiled in a way right now, like, so I'm just waiting for like I think everything's gonna hit on the delivery day, like it's gonna be like the nightmare.
No, it's
you
a great
excited
ride.
Oh, I'm super excited.
Nervous?
Yeah, because she's kicking a lot now. Either she's dancing or she's kicking inside, but she's punching now.
And when's the due month?
It's November.
Okay.
It's supposedly November 21st, but
so cool, man. I'm excited.
It's a Scorpio.
Hey, I get a niece.
Yeah,
you guys have already had nieces.
Yeah, I've already talked to your daughters about, you know, they're gonna be, you know,
that's
the
so
older
crazy.
Cousins.
That's funny.
That is scary.
Yeah,
well, congratulations again, Taj.
I gotta talk to your sons too.
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
Terrell, tell me about your week, man.
Not much. I mean, hung out with some friends, family friends,
cool.
With the boys and everybody, and they went swimming, and I've been pretty good with my workouts, my eating.
You look good,
you
man.
You gotta enjoy it. So once in a while, you gotta reward yourself. So
did you have a cheat meal?
Well, it wasn't like horrible, but yeah, I did. I enjoyed my Sunday or Saturday. It was, and then
did you get right back on it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm getting right back on it, but I'm at that point where I'm like probably two. I started like July 5th,
mm-hmm.
so I'm almost what 2-3 weeks into it, yeah. and it's getting like
tough.
It's boring. You're over it. It's, you know, like, yeah. It's like all the stuff that inspired you to start when you started, it like fades off. And now you're at that point where it's like, ugh.
Yeah. I see a lot of stuff on social media though. It's a lot of support.
Yeah. There's a lot of people out there that are doing it and getting it in, like The Rock. So it's like, if you watch him for 2 seconds, you'll feel like you're being lazy. Yeah. So I'm at that point, just, you know, trying to eat, and if I slip, I try not to beat myself up too much, and just get right back on it. That's how I have to do it.
What you've been posting has really inspired me, actually.
Yeah, because I haven't posted much.
On your story, you post your meals.
A little bit. Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's inspired me. So the meals. I actually started yesterday with a hardcore 600 to 800 calorie diet, and I'm going for 15 days.
Of that?
Yeah, man.
Where'd you get that idea?
Because, you know, I do the 5-2 diet sometimes.
What is that called?
What I'm doing now or what I like to do?
The 5 whatever.
5-2 diet.
5-2.
So you eat 600 calories twice a week. And then the other 5 days,
mm-hmm.
which is 5-2, you can have pretty much whatever you want.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do that for 15 straight days, the hardcore two parts. So I need you to stay with it so I can keep being inspired.
I'll post them up.
Yeah,
I'll
don't
keep them posting.
Don't stop on me now.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. It's all about eating better, making better choices, and
it's hard to do.
It is, but
it's not
when you get older.
You appreciate it when you stick with it, and I'm still getting good results, and you know it's fun. It's good.
Yeah, well, good, man.
One day at a time.
You're inspiring many, including your younger brother. So keep it going.
Oh, well, that's a given.
all right, so let's get right into the show.
I'm talking about inspiring you, not many.
Oh, okay. I think everyone.
I don't want that to come off very arrogant. I just talked about you.
All right, so on today's show, we are welcoming co-founders of The Dinner Party. We have Lennon Flowers, which is a very cool name,
mm-hmm.
and Carla Fernandez. We are going to, you know what? I should just bring them on and let them talk about what the dinner party is, right? Instead of me being the person to tell you guys, let's hear it from the family.
I'd rather hear it from them. Anyway.
What, you tired of my voice already? Carla and Lennon, are you guys with us?
We are.
Listen to that. They're like sisters, like unison.
That's
like
how
us.
People say us. Yeah.
How are you guys?
Doing great. Happy to be here. Thank you for having us and excited about you and your low-calorie diet we were hearing about.
Yeah,
we're
working on it.
Teach me everything. Yes.
It's not easy. So one of you guys are currently in L.A. and the other's currently in Tennessee. So you guys are...
That's correct.
You're not here with us, but we got you on the phone, and I'm very interested to hear exactly what the dinner party is. So what is the dinner party?
Great. My favorite question. So this is Lennon. The dinner party is best known in the world, quite simply, as a community of mostly, and I emphasize the mostly, folks in their 20s and 30s who've experienced a major loss and connect around potluck dinner tables as a chance to talk about it. And our interest is really in taking those kind of subjects that are shared universal human experiences that all of us are so good at not ever talking about. And as a result, you know, each one of us believes that we're kind of alone in living it, and using that as a starting point in building a relationship and a conversation and communities of friends who know each other's full stories and can really grow together from there. So we've got 230 tables, which is, you know, our shorthand for small circles of peers hosted by people who've lived through loss themselves and want to be a part of the same community that they're creating. And they meet, you know, every month or every other month or every quarter, but on an ongoing basis around tables and homes for a chance to talk about things that we otherwise don't. And we're active in about 100 cities worldwide today.
That is so great. So you guys are also international, or is it just U.S.?
Yeah, we are. So we've got tables in, I believe, 7 countries right now.
So cool.
Wow, that's great.
That's great, because we got a lot of international listeners, so that that's great. And to find out more, I'll mention this again later, but people can go to thedinnerparty.org. Is that correct? Is that the official website?
That's right.
Okay.
And then, when you go to the website, you'll be able to see, you can request to join a table if there's already a table in your area. And there's also instructions around how to start a table of your own and become what we call a host. So everything you need to know to get plugged in or help start a dinner party in your city or town is on our site.
I love it. Okay. And some of the cities you guys are looking for hosts are Chicago, Dallas, Houston, the West LA area, Washington, D.C., New York City, San Francisco, the Twin Cities. So if any of our listeners, and for all the listeners that we have, we preach this. You know, we've learned this doing the show, is the importance of sharing, getting your story out, fighting that feeling of isolation, of solitude. So we are completely supportive of this and appreciate you guys even starting this company, because it's a great thing. Well, you know what? Let me ask this. How did it get started? How did the dinner party, because it's a cool idea. So how and when?
Yeah, well, we're not the first people to come up with the idea of sitting down and breaking bread and having a conversation by any means. In many ways, this isn't rocket science. But the thing that brought us to the table originally was very, very personal story, and not an intention of starting a movement or building an organization. It was pure personal necessity. So this is Carla speaking. My dad died of brain cancer when I was 21 and was one of the first people in my friends group who had lost a parent. And I found myself going through, the thing that we'll all go through inevitably one day, losing a loved one in grief as human beings, and yet feeling alone and like I had to kind of hide this big part of my story, and felt like there was a lot that I was missing out on by kind of having to sweep this thing under the rug and just sort of get back to quote unquote life as normal, whatever that even meant anymore. So was so lucky to meet Lennon. We were coworkers at a startup in LA, and I sort of like accidentally let it slip that my dad had recently passed away, afraid that she might be like, oh no, here's some girl with baggage or what a downer. But instead her response was me too. And we realized that, the office water cooler or like happy hour after drinks with our other coworkers weren't really the moments to get into it and share stories and how are you doing now and what's happening with the rest of your family and all the questions that we were both holding that had to do with, like the death, but much more about life after and, the dates that we were going on and how to tell someone that your parent has died without killing the mood and all these little things you never think you're going to be wanting to talk to someone about. So Lennon came over for dinner along with a handful of other people who I'd met who'd also lost a loved one, very much with the spirit of a social experiment. Like this could be the most awkward, terrible night of all of our lives. And it actually ended up being the opposite. And people stayed late into the night. Some people even slept over, and we kind of committed to one another to keep gathering at least once a month to build that circle of friends who got the full spectrum of what we were going through at the time. And then as that group continued to gather, friends would hear about it. Lennon moved to another city and started a table when she moved to D.C. We had some therapists who were hearing about it from the original dinner party table, and they started to refer other patients to us. And we had a moment of like, wait a second, we're not trying to start anything. It almost in a way started itself. And then our work since then has really been about how do we meet the growing demand of people who want a seat at a table wherever they are.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that I believe want it, but they definitely need it. And I don't think a lot of people even realize the importance of it, because we, as we say quite often, we lost our mother quite young and we thought we could just power through it. And, we didn't do counseling. We didn't want to do counseling. But if something like this, where it's a comforting and welcoming group environment where you could just get your feelings out, it would have been incredible. So anyone who's going through any type of loss, that should be my question though. Is it any type of loss, or is it just loss from death from a loved one, or what do you guys
Yeah, it's a great question. So it is, you know, at the moment, our community is all folks who've experienced the death loss of someone important to them, you know, and that can mean, you know, parents, siblings, partners, dear friends. You know, we've got some folks in our community who've lost young children, you know, and that, you know, I think oftentimes we think about, you know, like losing, even the language of like losing a loved one, right? You know, somebody with whom you had a close, you know, albeit complicated relationships, as so many of our like relationships are, but also people who never met their parents, you know, or who had really complicated or estranged kind of relationships with somebody who died. And recognizing that there is grief in that experience too. And that, you know, all of those experiences shape not only who you are, but who you are after, and become these kind of, you know, overbearing elephants in the room, if not actually given the space to like breathe and be witnessed.
Yeah, that's great.
This is Terrell. I have a question. I'm sure you've guys had, you know, obviously first timers come, and I just wanted you to speak about people that may be on the fence of going to something like this, because, you know, when they lose someone, they're alone and they don't know if they want to go to an event like this. What can you say about people that go for the first time and basically just talk to someone that is on the fence? How would you explain the event?
Yeah. Well, some of the things that come to mind for me is that this isn't for everyone. You know, not everyone wants to come to a dinner and talk about their loss. People move through experiences like this totally differently. So we don't claim for this to be some sort of silver bullet for everybody. So that's one element. Another one is that, like, you can just show up and not say anything, and to us, that's participating. This isn't sort of a what we call quote unquote share or die experience where everyone has to rip their heart out of their chest and talk about their most personal stuff. It can literally just be sitting and nodding and listening. And that's great too. And also a lot of people hear about us and they're like, I'm interested, but I'm just not ready yet. We have people who come to the dinner party table and it's been 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years since their loss. And now they feel like they're in a place where being in community and, you know, cooking some good food and casually talking about it is exactly what they need. But it is something that, you know, the timing really has to be right. And that's really up to each individual person to make that call.
I think that's great. You know, the fact that they don't have to speak. Obviously people don't have to do anything, yeah. But the fact that there's no pressure to share and just to listen and nod,
yes.
You know, that can be
that's helpful.
Knowing myself, I'd probably be one of those people that want to just listen at first, you know, and that's great that you welcome those type of people too.
Yeah, I love
totally.
I think also
that's actually one of our, go ahead.
Oh no. I think also that you acknowledge that everyone grieves differently is also really important. And you guys do, in terms of, cause the three of us, you know, we went through the same experience, but it's like, we had completely different, you know, ways of grieving. So it's very commendable that you guys do acknowledge that and understand that.
Totally. Yeah, we both have, Len and I both have brothers who grieved very differently than we had. And we love them and they're amazing. And it can almost be disorienting in a different way when you seemingly are going through the exact same situation with the same characters and the same timing with someone you've grown up with. And yet, the road kind of forks and people take different paths. And a lot of times people who come to the table feel like, you know, they might not be on the same page or going through the same experience as their siblings and are looking for that sort of camaraderie and closeness that a sibling might provide around the dinner party table.
Yeah, that's great. Another thing is, I have a question because, you know, you mentioned it right. And I think we're a perfect example of it. My brothers and I, in grieving differently. Can I ask, how would you say it differentiated between you and any siblings on the passing of your parent?
Yeah, well, so I was one of my dad's caretakers and was always, my brother and I, his name is Jose, we joke that he's more like Bart Simpson and I'm more like Lisa Simpson. I'm like the nerdy do-gooder bookworm. And when my dad was sick, I was reading all the books I could find and then, you know, wanted to create my own
environment where people could come together and talk about it. My brother just wanted a party, and he spent a year going to music festivals and having so much fun. And, you know, there wasn't a right or a wrong way, but that year was hard for us because we were finding our sense of comfort in very different places. And we've now kind of like come back together and can talk about it and laugh about it. But it was an alienating time for sure. And it was hard to not kind of judge one another for how we were dealing with it. Mm-hmm. But we made it out on the other side, and he had a good time, and Lennon and I started the dinner party. So we're all okay.
I
think it was interesting, you know, my mom, by the time we had that first dinner party, it had been about 3.5 years since my mom had died while I was in college, and she was sick for 4 years before that. And I needed those 3.5 years to not talk about it. You know, my kind of survival strategy was, you know, filling every hour of every day with like work and student organizing and being as busy as possible. And then the problem for me was that by the time I was ready to talk about it, you know, and it hadn't, you know, like it wasn't surprise, surprise, you know, like grief grade A, you're done, move on. You know, it was still, you know, such a profound part of who I was, you know, both who my mom was in life and her absence. And the problem at that point was that there was nobody left to talk to. But I think about like, you know, my brother and I joke about it now, my earliest and worst experience of a dinner was when I dragged him. This was, you know, before we had, you know, a name for it, let alone kind of an organization. But I told him about what we were doing in Los Angeles, and we were starting to experiment a little bit with that in San Francisco where he was living. And I drug him to a dinner party in a public park with some friends. And it was a really hard experience because in that moment, you know, we realized, as Carla was saying, you know, yes, the characters in our stories were the same, but our stories were so different. And he was a, you know, freshman in high school when our mom got sick, and I was a senior. He spent 4 years under a roof, you know, and that was combined with like coming out of the closet in North Carolina and a lot of other things that were going on. And those were 4 really hard years. And I had the benefit of, you know, being 30 minutes down the road and kind of, you know, focused on college and coming back and forth over the weekends. But it was interesting because it was that kind of first experience where, you know, we realized it was actually really important for him to kind of like lock the door on some of that for a while and not be rushed into opening it up again. And then eventually, you know, through the dinner party, we were able to have conversations, not in a public dinner party setting with other people, but just, you know, between the two of us about our mom and about the, you know, surviving cast of characters and, you know, our pretty complicated families, you know, and all of it in a way that we hadn't before. You know, so I think it's so, the key thing that makes the dinner party work is that everybody does want to be there. And so it's really important to us, you know, that's why we've got, you know, a submission form and invitation to share your story and where you are now. Because, you know, it's not for everybody, and it's certainly not for everybody at any given moment.
So when you say it's not for everyone at any given moment, how, if I had lost the loved one in the recent, you know, years, a really close loved one, how would I know my time is now to start doing things like the dinner party? Like I heard one of you guys say about how you're happy you didn't start the dinner party till 3 to 3.5 years, or I'm sorry, you didn't open up for a good 3 years after the passing of your parent. When do you know when is the right time to start opening up? Or from your experience seeing people, and what would you say to that? How do you know when is the right time?
Yeah, I don't think that there's a formula for it, you know, which is part of why for the dinner party, you know, we don't connect people like, you know, there's a mix of timelines around each of our tables, you know, and we connect people on the basis of, you know, neighborhood and proximity and shared interests and shared types of loss, but rarely just time, you know, and the reason for that is because, you know, for one person, it might be 3 weeks later and we hear from those folks and they're ready immediately to go there and they want to be in conversation and community. There's a lot of folks, you know, who've experienced anticipatory grief, you know, and caring for, you know, a loved one with chronic or terminal illness, you know. And then there are people that, you know, we hear from 15 years later who are doing just fine. Thank you very much. You know, but there's this, you know, person whose name never gets to be mentioned, you know, and a part of themselves that's pretty unseen by the outside world. And they just want a space in which to talk about them and, you know, to talk about who they are as a result of, you know, the experiences that they've carried. So I know it's a difficult answer because it's, you know, can't be simplified into a formula, you know, and hour 72 or day 72 when you finish this fast. But I think, like, you know, the gut check when you want it, you know, you're ready. And if you don't, you know, like, God knows we just like should ourselves into entirely too many things, you know, and the one shared experience for like grieving people is that experience of, you know, like feeling like whatever you're feeling is the wrong thing to be feeling, you know, right. Everybody's got that, whatever it is. So I think just really like trusting your own gut.
That's great.
And one thing to add to that, for a lot of people, the dinner party is like, you know, a community that they'll have forever once they're in it, but it's also a means to another end. So a lot of people will come to dinners and be like, I don't know, I thought about going to therapy, but it just sounds so X, Y, or Z. And around the table, they'll get recommendations for therapists, or they'll get recommendations for books that end up being helpful, or they get the encouragement that they need to like go back to the gym or try out yoga or figure out whatever else might be helpful for you when you're going through a challenging time. So in many ways, I think people come and get plugged into the kinds of resources or figure out what the rituals are or that can be helpful for them ongoing.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. I have a question in terms of like, cause you guys have been doing it for a while. Do you see a difference between your male participants and your female participants? In terms of, and do you have a
great
different
question.
Approach as well?
Grieving while male? Yes.
Tell us.
Yes.
The first thing is that we just see a lot more female participants,
yes.
Which is something that we're actively working on. Mm-hmm. But what we're realizing, so, and Lennon, you can fill in what I forget, but, you know, we looked around our community and we're like, okay, we're about 80% women coming to the table and like what's going on with that and how do we make sure that this is a place that's inclusive, because like last time we checked it's not just women who are losing loved ones, it's all of us,
right?
And as we started to ask some of the guys in our community, we created like a little committee, we're like, what's going on here, what do we need to be doing, we came up against this reality that like not only is it hard to be a guy who's grieving, it's also hard, there's a sort of double stigma of both like grieving and this whole issue around masculinity and vulnerability and like talking about the fact that our brothers and boyfriends and friends who are male identified, like have feelings in the first place. So there's almost like this double stigma that's holding people back from coming to the table and feeling like talking about their feelings is actually a good thing and a healthy thing and something that isn't going to make them feel less than or less masculine or shamed or all of those things. So the first sort of big part of the equation for us has been, okay, how do we help make sure that guys know that this is, they're welcome here too? And then from my personal experience, like once you get into it, a lot of the themes that come up for people are very much the same.
Of course.
You know, it's just a matter of like creating spaces for men and women to be in dialogue with one another about that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. What do you have to add to that, Lenny?
I would just say that, you know, like I think that there's, we hear from a lot of guys too, you know, like, right, masculinity and vulnerability have not to this point gone together, you know, and I think that there are a lot of efforts in the world that are being done, you know, made to undo that, you know, and to give permission, you know, to men to, you know, open up about feelings, right, you know, and hard realities. I also think, you know, it's been interesting because for a lot of guys, you know, we've spoken with the idea of sitting down around a dinner table, you know, and talking about, you know, what you're feeling at any given moment is like, thanks, but no thanks, right? And so we end up hearing from a lot of men who, you know, their first entry point in the dinner party is like, yeah, I don't want to show up at a table to start with, but I'll show up at a happy hour, right? I'll show up at another kind of event in space. You know, men who, you know, open up to each other while like driving down a road, both looking forward, you know, because that eye contact for whatever reason, you know, is nerve wracking for a lot of folks, you know, or, you know, folks that open up on a hike. And so, you know, a big part of it you know, the starting point for us is around dinner tables, but we've got a lot of events happening across the country that are creating those other like entry points and ways for people to show up and realize like, oh, in fact, this isn't so scary. And it can be an incredible vehicle for meeting amazing human beings and who, you know, in whatever gender identity you hold, doesn't want more of that.
Yeah. I think what you guys are doing is so important, you know, and I'm thankful that you guys not only started it, but are here sharing it. I think it's such an important thing because I just, from my experience and seeing what others go through, it's a very tough topic to talk about, you know, and it's, I think that the thing with having a therapist is it's so like intimidating. Mm-hmm. Is that the right word?
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'll let you finish.
And I feel like, you know, what you guys are doing where it's more community driven or more, you know, team driven, it's very important. And I think, you know, cause we all got to get it out some way or another. We got to get it out. So I commend you guys for starting this and growing it. So I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
I do have a question unless you guys wanted to
go ahead.
Okay. My question is if I'm hearing about you guys for the first time and I want to become part of, I don't know if it's the database or just to submit my name for, to possibly attend a dinner party. What's the process for me to do that? What do I need to do?
Yeah. So, step one, so like, you know, we're not, everything that we're doing is done by humans, right? So you would go on to thedinnerparty.org. And if you were looking to simply save a seat at a table, and again, I think a lot of people, you know, think of this as like first come, first serve, RSVP, where's your calendar? Can I see like all of the events that are happening in a given city? And the answer is no. You know, in LA, we've got about 25 tables or so. In New York, we've got over 40. And, you know, and it ranges from, you know, one table in tiny towns, you know, to dozens. And our goal in connecting people is to connect them, you know, to people that you're actually going to have something, a real kind of affinity with. So we, you know, invite folks to share not only their name and email address and zip code, but a little bit more about their story and about, you know, what do you like to do on the weekend, you know, and tell us about yourself. You know, are you looking for a table that's closed, you know, to a particular identity? You know, we've got LGBTQ and tables exclusive to people of color, you know, kind of wide spectrum of experiences. And then people from within our team and staff will then go in and match people to one another. You know, so folks who share the same type of loss, you know, or just based on our own kind of guesswork, like, oh, we think you might actually be friends. And then from there, that host would, after that introduction, reach out, follow up with, you know, the date either of the first dinner party, if it's a table that's just starting out, or the one that's coming up next, you know, if it's a table that's been going for a while and still has a couple of open seats.
That's great.
And then if you're interested in hosting a conversation, you know, and we're looking for people there who are not only kind of in a space where they're still, you know, this is real for them, right? They, you know, one of the kind of key roles of a host is to role model vulnerability, you know, and to give people permission to talk about this stuff by going there first. So we're not looking for grief experts. In fact, quite the opposite, you know, and I think there's so many people that are like, I lived through this in the past and I am so good at grieving and I want to teach everybody everything. And we're like, no, thank you. Those end up being the folks that we screen out. But people who are really longing, you know, for a community and connection and the chance to talk about this, but are also in a place with their own loss where they can listen really deeply, you know, where they can hold space for other people, are then invited to apply to start a table. There's a host application on our website. And the, you know, steps would be talking to our staff member, Ayana, out of Miami, or somebody from our community management team, and just a kind of quick screening call and a chance to, you know, hear more about your story and what you're looking for the out of the experience. And then if, you know, if it's aligned, going through a, you know, light touch kind of training process, you know, and everything from, you know, like how do you actually schedule and get flaky millennials through the door and to show up to, you know, like how do you actually make sure that every voice that wants to be heard has the chance to, you know, as a kind of light touch facilitator in that conversation. And then they're brought into a peer community of other hosts, you know, who connect over everything from, you know, events to, you know, host Facebook group for the chance to share what's working and what's not.
Yeah, that's great.
I have a question. I know it probably varies from city to city, country to country, but as far as the events, I'm sure there's some events that are, you know, with big attendance and some with smaller. Is there, have you seen any type of difference of, just how it would affect somebody?
A
big group versus a smaller group. Is there a difference in that? Have you noticed anything with that?
Yeah. One of the things we've noticed is, I mean, there's lots of different factors that we're looking at. And mm-hmm. one of the things we've noticed is that it's really powerful when the same group of people gather over time. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were experimenting with this, we were like, is it sort of a different group? Is there one dinner party table in Los Angeles and the first 10 people to sign up are there? And it's different. It's a rotating cast of characters. What we've realized is like, no, what's really amazing is what gets to happen when it's like, you know, dinner one is great. Learn everyone's stories. Dinner two is cool. People are starting to feel familiar. Dinner three, four, five is when the like glue between people can really start to form, because you start being like, oh yeah, hey, how was that date that you were mentioning? Or what ended up happening with that job interview? And it shifts from feeling like a group of strangers who've all gone through the same thing into a group of friends. So that feels like one of the really important aspects. You know, and we've had dinners of four or five people and they're great. And we've had dinners of, you know, when you get bigger than 12, it can be hard because not everybody has, you know, people get less time to share their story, like yeah. less airtime, can feel less intimate. But yeah, Lennon, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think just my personal favorite is 6 to 8. There's actually some like really weird science, if you want to get nerdy, that like the perfect small group size is 8 people. You know, and again, we've had, you know, like dinner parties that, you know, one person happens to be free on a Tuesday night and everybody else cancels at the last minute, but save one other person, and they get together for drinks and have incredible kind of connections. Right. So you can have, obviously, you know, a meaningful experience. And sometimes it's easier to open up to one person the first time than it is to a table of, you know, 6 or 7. So it kind of varies, but, you know, that closed sense of intimacy, you know, we're not, I always get annoyed in seeing, you know, photos of dinner parties on Pinterest and Instagram of like tables of 50 people, because I'm like, I know that you only talk to the person sitting right next to you, and there was like no cohesion or unity, let alone the chance for every single voice around that table to be heard. Mm-hmm. So that's really our goal, is to keep it, you know, small enough to maintain that real sense of intimacy. And when it gets to a certain number of people, you know, and every seat is kind of regularly full, then a host will let our staff know that it's time to close it, you know. And if at a certain point, like a couple people move away and you've got a little less attendance and you think you could squeeze in one more, then you can reopen it to a couple of additional guests, and we'll connect accordingly.
Wow. I have a question for both of you. This is might seem like a weird question, but what did you learn not to do, like in terms of like, I don't want to say a disaster, but
you just said disaster.
Well, yeah, I did say disaster. but something
you can use that D word.
But in terms of like, you know, you made a quick right, you know, turn in terms of like, yeah, an adjustment, because obviously starting out trial and error, and it's like.
So basically, what
your biggest
work?
Lesson in terms of, okay, this is not working, or that was the wrong thing to do, and then how did you change it, or how did you adjust?
So the first thing that comes to mind for me, you know, I think when we started this, you know, we were like millennials getting ready to talk about grief and loss on the internet, and we're like, okay, is this the last time that we have friends ever, you know, and are we going to hear nothing but crickets, you know, is anybody looking for the same kind of experience that we were? And that felt like the hard part, right? Mm-hmm. It turns out that was not the case. The hard part was not getting people through the door. It was, what do you do when they do? Like, how do you actually meet expectations and demand? And for years, you know, like there was way more demand and people knocking on our doors than we had capacity. Mm-hmm. As, you know, a team that began with, you know, as a team of volunteers, you know, and then, you know, staff of one and staff of 1.5 and staff of three, you know, we're still pretty scrappy. And so the question became, okay, how do we grow this? But how do we grow it in a way that's really intentional and where we're not letting any human fall through the cracks, right? And where, you know, it's not when you reach out with your story, you know, one of the critical things that determines whether or not you actually show up at your first dinner is, do you actually feel like really seen and heard by the person who responds to that email, right? As you've shared something that's incredibly intimate and vulnerable, you know, the ability to not be met with kind of robot internet voice, you know, or in kind of spaces that feel cold is really important to us. So I think the big disaster, you know, for a time was that we thought success was scaling. We thought it was growth. You know, it was like, look at all these people who are coming through our doors. Look at the increased number of tables, you know, on a month to month or year to year basis. And the problem with that was, yes, the number of tables that were, you know, 100% reflective of that same kind of experience that Carla and I had had around that first, you know, group of folks in LA years before, you know, those were increasing, right? But so were the number of tables where we weren't in regular touch, you know, with hosts, you know, and we couldn't tell you definitively exactly like what's happening with that group of people in this particular city at this particular moment. And so we actually had to like close our doors. That was in the fall of this past year. We shut our doors for 4 months and figured out our systems. You know, most of our work, you know, to this point has been powered by Google Docs, you know, but we wanted to make sure that if you reached out to join a table, you heard from a person and you didn't slip through the cracks, and that we were regularly in touch with our host. And if something wasn't working, you know, they had the trust in the relationship with our staff and team to like share that, to name that, you know, rather than kind of ghosting, as is so often kind of the, you know, cultural norms that we have fallen into. So that was the big one, you know, stop worshiping at the altar of scale and actually like serve people and remain human as we grow.
Yeah. I know I keep saying this, but I think what you guys are doing is so great. It's so great. So just keep, you know, for whatever it's worth, keep going, and you have big supporters here. One question we got from, Twitter. Why? You guys don't see what my brother's face. He's just nodding in agreement with what I'm about to read, I think. But one question I got from Twitter from Toria in France is, by you guys call it the dinner party, and was that intentional? Because most of the time when you're grieving, you don't really feel like going to party, but you know, she thinks it's a great idea that it's called the dinner party. So was that intentional, or how did the name come about?
Yeah. It's funny. We every now and then people will read the name and be like, party, but you're talking about grief, you know, like how could that be a party? And the honest truth is like, it is a party. Like it's a conversation that ends up celebrating life just as much as it is about talking about people who aren't here anymore. Yeah. And like, why do we have to have these kinds of conversations about, you know, the biggest questions in sort of the traditional expected settings, which is like the support group, which meets under fluorescent lighting and then a circle of metal folding chairs. Like we've all been in those spaces where we're like, okay, this is sort of like the culturally approved places and environments where we can talk about death and grief and the hard questions. It all is sort of in a specific tone. For us, we're so excited to figure out how do we, by changing the environment and using different language, and like, yeah, why can't this be a party? Invite a whole different way of connecting about this stuff with one another, where it doesn't feel cold, it doesn't feel institutional, it doesn't feel like it's dominated by like a medical narrative or medical culture, but it's really about being human with one another, recognizing our own humanity, celebrating the humans that have, you know, shaped us into the people that we are today who aren't here anymore. And so in many ways, when we've gotten pushback on the name, we've just leaned in harder, because if there's any time when we need a party, when we're piecing parts of our lives back together and reflecting on what life is like after.
I love the name.
Yeah. And I want to be real. I mean, like parties, you know, like I think that we've got this like dumb association that like happiness is the goal. Right. And like, there can be such incredible power in a night in which, you know, like people feel free to cry, right? And that, like, we can have, you know, like, amazing experiences that feel really good to be a part of, that aren't just talking about, like, you know, the hilarious memes you just encountered on the internet, you know, or the bad, you know, first date you just went on. And so I think, you know, for us, it was also having the language of the dinner party and just the experience of gathering with a group of people, you know, who become really good friends and talking about loss. For me personally, I know that was the first time that I ever felt comfortable talking about, you know, it became kind of an entry point to actually naming the fact that my mom had died. Mm-hmm. Because for the first time in those, you know, 3.5 years, I had something that was life-giving attached to something that had been so devastating, you know, and continued to kind of wreak havoc in a lot of different ways in our lives. But to actually have something that you're not embarrassed to share with your friends, you know, like we kind of use muffled tones, you know, and I think that that's one of the big things that we need to open up are like honest conversations about mental health and depression and sadness and all of the things that humans carry.
Yeah.
But also we need to stop being afraid and recognize that, you know, yes, we can laugh and cry in the same night and sometimes even in the same breath.
Yeah, I love it.
It's great. You guys have accomplished so much. My question is, what's next for the dinner party? Where do you guys see this going?
Yeah.
We laugh because we have, like, in many ways, I feel like we're really just at the beginning of what we're building. One of the things that we're actively talking about right now, and I'm sure Lennon will add to this, is, you know, okay, we have figured out how to bring a group of people together who we've taken one hard conversation, grief and loss, and, you know, put it on the table and built a community around it. We'll continue to deepen that community and meet the incoming need from other people. But we've also started to talk to folks who are convening people around different types of hard conversations. And grief and loss in its different forms beyond just death loss. Mm. And we're working with them to kind of take our methodology, the methodology of dinners and all the, you know, nerdy stuff we were talking to you about like ideal number of people and how do you start the conversation and basically white labeling or giving our methodology to other organizations who want to have more of a peer-to-peer community within the people that they've pulled together. So that's one of the things that we're working on, where dinners wouldn't just be about death loss, but would be about other forms of hardship and loss, partnering with organizations that have real like expertise and personal experience in that. So that's one of the things, one of the 1 million things we're working on. Lennon, you want to talk about any of the other pieces?
Yeah. I mean, I think like one of the things that we're really excited about is also, you know, the end goal from the very beginning with the dinner party, it wasn't, you know, like growing a program or growing an organization, you know, and like bricks and mortar, you know, like the reality is that the number of people who experience loss is called everyone, you know, and the number of people who experience loss before they should is called way too many for a single organization to ever serve. So our end goal was really like, how do we actually change culture, right? How do we make it more okay? And in this moment in time in which we are seeing the profound hunger that people carry, whoever you are and whatever stories you hold, to name that story, to be seen, to be witnessed, and to be honest about, you know, everything you've come through and survived, and, you know, the many different kind of multitudes that make up who we are. I think one of the things that excites us most is the kind of chance to tell those stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
So working with, you know, Sheryl Sandberg, and the amazing team over at Option B on creating, you know, guidebooks on how to show up for friends, you know, who've experienced a major loss, right? You know, what are the kind of alternative holiday gatherings that we can do, you know, for people who no longer have a home to return to around the holidays, you know? We've been working, collaborating with a writer's room in LA, you know, around grief and loss narratives and, you know, actual television shows, right, and stories. So how do we actually ensure that this, as we sit on this kind of gold mine in the sense of thousands upon thousands, we now got about 10,000 stories, you know, of folks who've experienced a major loss, you know, and where they are now, right? And those stories aren't depicted in our media. We, like, turn everything into a kind of quick Hallmark or platitudes or oversimplifications or you know, linear stages of grief. And so I think one of the things that we're really excited about is how do we actually just debunk and demystify a lot of the myths that we carry and this kind of assumption that if you can't fix it, you shouldn't say anything at all, because people aren't looking to be fixed. They're just looking to be seen.
Yes, that's very powerful and very true. Okay, we're basically out of time, but I have to ask this real quick. Have you guys heard of a story where someone has met their new best friend or are engaged? Has that happened to you yet? And if not, it's going to happen.
We don't have any babies yet, but okay. Maybe soon. Tune back in, but there's definitely some dinner party romances that have formed.
I'm
and
sure.
Spontaneous trips that have been planned around the dinner party table for the next day, and all kinds of good love connections.
I'm
so
sure.
We joke that maybe someday we're just going to turn this whole thing into a dating website. But if anyone is listening and feels inspired and wants to fund that and work with us on that, we're here.
That is so great. I can already see it coming, whether it's in a couple years, you're going to get an email or a phone call and someone's going to be thanking you and inviting, you know, you guys to their wedding. So just be ready for it. You heard it here first. But okay.
You can be our date.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on The Power of Love. And again, like we said, we're big supporters of what you guys are doing. For our listeners, please go to thedinnerparty.org to see where you can join. There's cities all over the U.S. and even outside the U.S., such as Amsterdam, Calgary, Edmonton, Guatemala City, London, Montreal, Toronto, Oxford. There's so many cities. And again, if you didn't hear your city, it's an easy way to host a dinner party. So just go to the website. All the information is there. Reach out. As I said to you guys on our conversation, we like to close the show with maybe 30 seconds of you guys saying whatever you want. It could be about the dinner party. It could be about anything you want. So 30 seconds. How about that? You guys ready?
Lennon, you want to go first? Sure.
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, so this actually has nothing to do with the dinner party. It's a thing that I'm thinking about right now. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have seen Who is America, the Sacha Baron Cohen show.
I've heard
but
of
the
it.
Thing that I'm like holding is, and I, you know, like love the attacks on, you know, like exposing gun lobbyists, you know, for the hypocrites they are and the moments of, you know, Dick Cheney. There's an incredible kind of clip of, you know, this mastermind of evil, you know, celebrating being handed and signing a waterboard. But it was also like really disappointing to see some of the ways in which, like, you know, folks are dismissed and seen just in like the for like the, you know, monoliths and labels and identities and entrenchment of like, you know, I don't know. I think that's one of the things that I'm holding right now. I'm wondering if that does more harm than good. And how can we see more people in their complexities rather than just continually going to the, you know, ends of extreme and the extremes and, you know, painting people for really weird stereotypes. So I think a big part of what we want to do in the dinner party, right, is, you know, say that, yes, you can be grieving and a partier simultaneously. And I'd love to see more of that in the world. Yeah. Kyla, what you got?
Love it.
I have to do the, oh, sorry. Do you want to respond to that?
Yes. No, no.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
And I'm going to follow it up with the semi-obligatory, somewhat shallow plea for support. And, you know, we're working really hard to keep up with incoming demand, but we are a nonprofit and we're mostly volunteer driven. And if any of this resonated with you, we'd love to have you be a part of the dinner party. We would also love for your help in raising funds to keep this thing alive and growing. So go to thedinnerparty.org. Our emails are also Carla, C-A-R-L-A, and Lennon, L-E-N-N-O-N, at thedinnerparty.org. So we'd be happy to chat with anyone who wants to get more information about any of the above.
I love it. I love it. So Instagram, The Dinner Party, Twitter, dinner at Dinner Partiers, Dinner Partiers, and Facebook at This Is The Dinner Party. Make sure you guys follow the dinner party. Go check out the website and step out there and open yourself up. And even if you just want to listen to other people, we're all about community. And it's such a powerful, important thing to do, especially when you lost a loved one. So make sure you guys go do it. You guys, thank you. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. And again, we really thank you and really support the dinner party. So we'll connect soon and check in and see if you guys are off to a wedding anytime soon.
All right. We'll see you there.
All right. Take
care. Thank you, guys.
All righty. I love it. Great idea. Great thing. And the website's really cool. And the Instagram is really cool. So make sure you guys, seriously, listeners, follow it and tune in. Make sure you guys stay with it. Anything else, brothers? Because we are going a little over. That's it.
Happy upcoming birthday to Toria.
Yes. Happy birthday, Toria. And great question, by the way.
Great question.
Great question. All right. I guess that's it. We will see you guys next Wednesday. Peace and love to everyone.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.